Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by It's for Women. Discover female health insurance through It's for Women.
Adam Kay announced his first crime novel. Everyone thought, oh no, not another cozy crime book. Well, thanks to all the filthy jokes, there's a cocaine inhaler in here, the accidental bothering of corpses by the singularly worst amateur detective in fiction novel history, A Particularly Nasty Case, that's the name of it, is very far from cozy crime fiction. Adam Kay joins us live from BBC Sheffield. Good morning, Adam.
Hello, how are you?
Very well, thank you. And well done in this book. I laughed for over 300 pages and then realised I can't quote any of this on morning radio.
Oh, that is a problem. We'll have to talk quite obliquely about
yes,
the book.
We do. Have you been planning this move into fiction now for a long time?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, I can't be the only student at a medical school occasionally sat through a lecture thinking, oh, that would be a good way to kill someone. But, you know, because of the society we live in, I can't go around doing that. So I've had to do it in the fiction world.
Now, what is it about a rheumatology clinic that produces so many bizarre and some horrible people as well in this story?
I wanted the hero, if we can call him that, to be a rheumatologist, because I think I'm fed up with seeing, in TV shows and books, the doctor is a superstar surgeon who can fly a helicopter, also works as a ninja. That I've had enough of that. So I wanted a doctor who was just fine. And he's fine. He's got a like, decent rapport with the patients. He's never going to win any prizes. And, you know, write what you know. I think I was never going to win any prizes either. So that was quite an easy write.
It's looking after people's joints and things, yes. But he's a disaster protagonist, Eitan. Tell us about this doctor.
Yes, so he's just back at work after a couple of months off with his mental health. And then a couple of days back into his return, his boss, the medical director, dies of a heart attack. Mm-hmm. Now, everyone thinks it's a heart attack, apart from Eitan, who's convinced he's been murdered. But because he's been unwell, everyone just sort of raises a bit of an eyebrow at him and sees him through the prism of his mental health. So essentially, rather than a whodunit, it starts as a bit of an if done it. Like, was there actually a murder here, or is this an enormous wild goose chase?
And an if done it. I do like that. And he's kind of an unlikable character, but you still root for him and we want him to find love.
Yeah, we do. He's got a new boyfriend. He's going out with a porter called Cole Porter, for an example of the high quality of jokes you can expect in this. But you know, he's in this new relationship, and I think he's quite catastrophic and chaotic.
Yes.
But I think we're willing him forwards because he's got a bit of charm and he's got a lot of humour, even though it's slightly sarcastic.
Slightly.
Yeah. deeply, award-winningly sarcastic.
And he is, the disasters unfold around him from the very beginning. I don't think I could even describe the opening scene.
No, I was trying to work out if there was a way to describe the first scene, but there isn't, so we just have to leave it there.
People know your humour by now. They know it by now, for sure. So we know by now, of course, you are a qualified doctor. It's like you're producing so many books that you're afraid to stop in case they make you go back to work in the NHS. But talk to us again about doctors being really good at knowing how to kill someone. Is this something that you noticed in medical school? Are there lots of methods that you're storing up now for a future of crime novels?
Future crime novels, to be clear, not a future of crime. It was... Because I worked on labour ward, I was happily nowhere near the morgue. And so when I was putting this together, I went out for lunch with an old friend of mine who's a coroner. And this was in London. I took him for a bite of lunch, and I was saying, you know, would this work and would that work? And he was like, yes, that's an amazing way to do away with someone. And then realised that all these other tables around us were staring and wondering what this conversation was. But yeah, it's been an interesting intellectual exercise. And the other thing I can do is make the people who die thinly veiled versions of my actual enemies in real life.
Oh, really? Okay. I couldn't help but notice some of the lesser likable people in the book had kind of Irish sounding names. I think you would say Moran over in England, whereas it'd be Moran over here.
I mean, there's only one. I think I'm quite equal opportunities with the dislikable people who I bump off in this book.
There might be another person, but anyway, that would be a spoiler, so I can't say. But you do, in this book, because it's very, very funny and you can just read it as a comedy, enjoy it, but you're making serious points about the poor state of the health service in Britain yet again. I'll give this example to people. The hospital had shuttered the staff showers as part of its commitment to ruining the lives of its employees.
I think that the wonderful thing about fiction is you can bring in some more serious topics, even if it's funny. Like the way I cut up the carrots really small so the children don't notice it in their ice cream. And that we do the same in this book, because it talks about, you know, the difficulty of working in these, you know, these big organisations.
Yes.
And like the fact that every morning when he sits down at his desk, the computer takes 7 minutes to boot up. There'll be some doctors listening thinking, oh, that's not bad, 7 minutes.
Windows 95.
Oh, at best. That's why, like, when you hear all this sort of stuff about, oh, we're going to introduce AI into hospitals, like, how? It's not going to work. We can't have spreadsheets at the moment, so good luck with ChatGPT. So it does have a couple of more serious points in it. It does look at what it's like, you know, if you have a mental illness and how you're treated and how you're considered and being seen through that particular lens. It also talks about classism, which is something that I'd found a bit in medicine. And so this consultant going out with a porter gets a lot of shade for that, which is something I'd seen. And it's quite old-fashioned upstairs, downstairs world of a hospital.
Yeah. Talk about the mental illness, because the character Eitan, he's dealing with his own troubles. And you're making a very important point here, aren't you, about doctors who will have mental health struggles, probably because of the job, but often other more ingrained disorders like bipolar.
Yeah, so this sort of sums it up for me. So when I, when the book was announced and the blurb goes up on Amazon and all that, it mentions that Eitan has this condition, bipolar. And 4 people got in touch with me who I consider to be friends, 2 of whom I went to the weddings of, to say to me, oh, I'm really pleased that, you know, you're talking about this condition, because you don't know this, but I've got bipolar and I just don't talk about it. And people don't talk about it because of stigma and shame and taboo. And everyone listening will have people in their lives with bipolar, which affects 2% of the population, and they won't know about it. And so it's about, you know, fear comes from lack of education. And I think a lot of people find, you know, the thought of bipolar schizophrenia, you know, makes them rear back a little just because they don't know much about it.
I love your description, because you say it had struck Eitan that there are 2 types of mental illness, the kind that had recently become socially acceptable, anxiety, depression, ones you'd mention at a dinner party, and then his kind, bipolar disorder, schizophrenia, where people would make excuses to leave the dinner party. You're making barbs. It's a good barb.
Yeah, I mean, the character isn't me, but sometimes I put my voice into it, and that is very much what I feel and what my voice is. And so, you know, it's not laid on too thick, I don't think, although it is essentially at its heart just a funny sort of thrillery rompy thing.
But, it is. These are things I'm finding hidden almost.
But you sort of, I want people just to occasionally think, you know, how would I react if it turns out that my doctor or my cousin or my colleague, you know, had this condition?
You're making all these serious points, aren't you? Because you still love the NHS in Britain.
Very much. Very much so.
But you're never going back.
In the words of Taylor Swift, we are never, ever. I mean, I tried to. Over COVID, there was this shout out. When it was the early doors, and no one quite knew how big and bad it was all going to get, there was this shout out, any recently retired doctors, phone this number. So I phoned the number straight away, and they did this big interview, and they asked me, you know, when did I work and what grade, and then this and that. And they said, we'll phone you in a couple of days. And then I got the call back saying, no, we're fine, thanks. So that was a bit insulting.
Oh, you never know what happened. We were celebrating recently the Irish nurses who left this country to live and work in yours, in the NHS, and led very valuable and dedicated lives over there to that service. I'm sure you must have happened across upon the Irish staff when you were in the system.
Oh, 100%, yeah. Holding the place together.
with sellotape.
That's the brilliant thing about the NHS is it is the biggest melting pot in the world. And, you know, I'd say there is no country who's not represented keeping the people of Britain on the road.
And it's the same over here. It is immigration that keeps the whole thing together. The classism, was that something you witnessed all the time as a doctor?
Very much so. And I witnessed every single ism there is, homophobia, not least of it. And I think it's simultaneously possible to consider the NHS to be the UK's greatest achievement as a nation, free at the point of service, based on your clinical need, never based on your bank balance. And at the same time, it can still be the worst organisation to work for, where it's deeply troubled, deeply troubling, and often, rotten for the people who work there.
What's kind of strange about, maybe medicine being full of classism and prejudices in various ways, is that these people are coming out of universities, which, if you read the Tory press in Britain, are the most woke, liberal places of progressivism you could ever imagine.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it'll be the first time that a newspaper's views didn't entirely tally with each other. I think the problem is actually more at the top, the dinosaurs who haven't retired off yet.
Right.
So This Is Going to Hurt was my first book. It was a book of my diaries when I was working as a doctor. And I was very honest and vulnerable in it and talked about how and why I left and how I struggled and things like that. And, the majority of feedback I got from doctors was, extremely positive, from people saying they were glad that this was being talked about. But I still did get maybe a dozen or so messages from older doctors, almost exclusively male, quite a lot of them surgeons, actually, saying, what did you think was going to happen? Man up, grow a pair. And it's like, this is an attitude that still exists.
Wow.
And until these people are gone, it's unlikely to change that much.
Do you think then the ones being fed out of universities with their medicine degrees, that they are going to be the new regime and that it is eventually going to filter out those old kind of ridiculous views?
Yeah, that's the hope, and I am seeing it change. I wrote a book, it was about working 15 years ago, and although depressingly, it does feel like the good old days. Now, if you look at the NHS today, as I'm sure you're aware, it's not having a good patch.
Oh, I know. The NHS in the north of Ireland used to be the envy of us here in the south, but no longer, unfortunately. Mind you, some Irish doctors might be thinking, sorry, they have computers in the hospital. But in your life today, yourself and your husband, James, you've got two children, Ruby and Ziggy.
That's right. They're great. And it's reminding me of my junior doctor days with this sort of covered in bodily fluids and absolutely no sleep and all of that. But they went off to nursery this week, which was a major achievement. And also, it's going to really increase my productivity. The book is dedicated to Elsa, Anna and Olaf for keeping my children quiet long enough for me to write this. And that's very heartfelt. If were it not for Frozen, this book would be nowhere near written.
That came from a P.G. Wodehouse dedication, I believe, did it?
Yeah, so he dedicated a book to his goddaughter, without whom this book would have been written in half the time.
That's really lovely. And your two kids, Ruby's kids, they're a pair of two-year-olds. Have you been watching out for their destination in life?
Yeah, I mean, I asked Ziggy what he wanted to do, and he said he wants to be a tractor. So, which I think is an excellent career.
Yeah, that's a really good idea.
Yeah. So, as long as Ruby's a Disney princess, I think if it pans out like that, she'll be happy. She doesn't mind which princess it is.
A tractor and a Disney princess. I mean, you'd be very proud.
One of
parents.
Each. Yeah, exactly.
Now, this means you have to watch a lot of children's TV, like the parents of young children. Are there any shows that you watch that are borderline enjoyable?
Oh, there's... I'm president of the Bluey fan club.
Oh.
That is such a good show. It's these Australian family of dogs. And it is, I realised it was good one day, when, or so good, because I was watching it with the kids. They scuttled away from the sofa. I stayed to the end of the episode to find out what happened. So, and in fact, I'm now in the middle of making a bit of kids' telly at the moment, and I've realised that my mission is to get the entire family sat in front of the sofa.
You've got to keep them there.
Yeah, that's got to be it.
That's got to be tough. Is that turning one of your many children's books into TV? Is that what's happening?
Yeah, it is. It's a book called Dexter Proctor, the 10-year-old doctor. which does what it says on the tin.
Dexter.
Yeah, another Dexter. Okay, right. And he's... So he's this super mega genius and goes to work in a hospital. And we've got an amazing cast of kids. But in order to make it good for the adults, the adult cast are off the scale. We've got Harry Enfield and Jamila Jamil and Sue Johnston, Mike Wozniak, Gemma Whelan, Peter Serafin, which Michelle Gomez. It's Pippa Hayward. It's a very cool cast. So that's coming together nicely, shooting that at the Wirral at the moment.
And that's coming out of you've got a whole industry of children's books going. The new one, even this one, is also out this year, particularly Nasty Case. Simon Gets Sneezed. What's going on there?
Oh, yeah. So this is for the younger children. This is a picture book, the sort of 2 to 5s. Simon Gets Sneezed. Simon's a piece of snot, and it is a story of what it's like to be a piece of snot.
Oh, they're going to love that.
And also, it's sneaking in some proper actual medical knowledge and facts. Like, you know, snot is a part of our immune system, and it's filtering out all the pollution and helping with allergies and all that sort of stuff. And... I just reckon every so often a child will ask a medical question of their parents and they won't necessarily remember what they were taught at school when they were 12.
Yeah.
So they can subcontract some of that to my books.
It might even be the very first medical question. What is snot?
An important question.
It's an important one, yeah. Some adults will be informed about it as well. So you're kind of basically doing this sort of using comedy to stealthily educate the whole world.
Oh, certainly for kids, because my first book for kids was the sort of for 7 to 12 years old, called Kay's Anatomy, and it was basically a funny, disgusting medical textbook. Because I've always thought the body's the most amazing, brilliant, fascinating thing, but because you're forced to learn about it at school, it's never had the same cool billing as space or dinosaurs and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So this was my mission to say the body is exciting and brilliant and suitably disgusting that kids will want to read about it.
Well, some of the texts are already saying thank you, Adam, for your brilliant children's books, Endless Fun with Adam Kay's Anatomy and Marvelous Medicine, Science Made Easy, great fun, no problem heading to bed for the next gory details. Kids absolutely love it.
That's very sweet.
I have to mention, you've an awesome actor doing the audiobook for this novel.
Oh yeah, as an up-and-coming young lad called Andy Serkis has stepped up to do the audio, which he's obviously totally brilliant.
Incredible.
I did the audiobooks for the for my non-fiction books, like This Is Gonna Hurt, because it was my literal diaries, so the publisher was like, it's a bit strange if you get someone else doing that, so I did it. And
you're a performer.
I'm a performer.
Yes. Yeah.
But I really struggled. There's one word that's in the book loads and loads of times, which I just really can't say, which is, I'm going to try hard here, prescription. That was quite good for me.
Really? What was that?
I don't know why, it sort of somehow it was just always curdles as I'm saying it. And we were taking, like, it was getting in my head and I was trying to say it again and again and again and it wasn't going right. And eventually I realised that it's my book, it's not Dickens, I can just change it. So if you listen to the audiobook of This Is Gonna Hurt, in the second half there's lots of bits where, like, and I wrote down the names of some medicines on a piece of paper and other things to make sure I don't have to say that word. But this time...
That's post-traumatic stress disorder, isn't it? That's what
I think it probably is. But this time we've handed it over to Serkis, who's done an absolutely lovely job.
Andy Serkis.
As of course he would.
Radio presenters, by the way, are terrified of the word specifically, I think. And particularly is not great either.
Oh, sorry about that. Yeah, that's...
But come here, I want to tell your fans, you're coming to Ireland next year. I presume you're doing a tour right across Britain. And in Ireland, you're going to strange, disconnected places. Armagh's Marketplace Theatre and Limerick's Lime Tree Theatre. I hope you're not hiking between the two. Nobody's messed up the bookings.
I think I've got about 20 dates appearing on my website, which is adamkay.co.uk across Ireland. And I'm very much looking forward to it because, to my shame, I've only really done Dublin before. And I've had lots of messages saying there's more to the country than Dublin.
Good.
And so now I'm actually doing it. So spending a month and a half pootling around and very excited about that.
He even does his own outros. Adam Kay, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Enjoy your day. Bye-bye.